that big White House that we live in.
Can you play this louder? I think I'm losing my hearing from drinking diet soda. I'll put it up on the website soon. Savage's medical records exposed. I don't need that for my ratings. Welcome to the Savage Nation. Flap less, coast more. Well, Michelle is bopping to the east and bopping to the west. In fact, Michelle Obama bopped into a campaign polling place and campaigned inside a polling place, which is a violation of Illinois state law. So what can I tell you? And of course, she was covered for immediately by the thugs who run the Illinois State Board of Elections. That's an oxymoron, by the way. It's a long series of words. But to say Illinois State Board of Elections, you may as well say Al Capone. They said that Obama may have simply been ignorant of the law and violated it unintentionally. Listen, the first thing I ever learned in a court of a traffic court when I was 17 was I said, "Your Honor, I didn't know." He shut me up right away. He said, "Young man, ignorance of the law is no excuse. Guilty, $50. I guess Michelle Obama never had that kind of tough childhood that I had. Everything was laid out for her. So she goes and campaigns inside, electioneers inside a polling place, and right away they're covering for her. Big headline today, a judge has said that 20 states have the right to sue to block socialized Obamacare. Did you hear this one? A judge has ruled, yes, you can sue to block Obamacare. Block Obamacare. Bloop Obamaboo. But the point is, it's going to happen anyway. 1-800-449-8255. But the big story to me is that Nancy Pelosi is the most abusive congressional individual in the history of the Congress. She and her family and staff took 85 tax-paid trips on military airplanes between March of 2009 and June 2010. This is according to new documents uncovered by Judicial Watch. Pelosi's daughter and son-in-law, who, by the way, is the son of the filmmaker, who will remain unnamed, and two grandsons were on the June 20th, 2009 flight from Andrews Air Force Base to San Fran, where Pelosi lives. So they're using it as a taxi service. On July 2nd, 2010, Nancy Pelosi took a grandson on a flight from Andrews Air Force Base to Travis Air Force Base, north of San Francisco. The documents reveal that Pelosi's travel has cost the United States Air Force $2.1 million over a two-year period, $101,000 of which was for in-flight expenses, including food and alcohol. For example, purchases for one Pelosi-led congressional delegation included Johnny Walker Red, Grey Goose Vodka, E&J Brandy, Bailey's Irish Cream, Maker's Mark Whiskey, Courvoisier Cognac, Bacardi Light Rum, Jim Beam Whiskey, Beefeater Gin, Dewar's Scotch, Bombay Sapphire Gin, Jack Daniel's Whiskey, Corona Beer, and several bottles of wine. And you say, well, what's the big deal? And if you don't know that that's a big deal, then you really shouldn't be listening to this show. You really shouldn't be listening to the show. You should have no concept of voting, even. You should lose the right to vote. We have never had a more corrupt, arrogant regime in the history of the United States of America. Never. Never, never. If we had a truly independent FBI, these trips by Pelosi would have been investigated when they were first reported. Bonnie Frank's flights on a jet owned by a hedge fund billionaire who received $200 million in bailout money would have been investigated, et cetera, and so on. So what can I tell you? 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. Pelosi and family flights, 85 trips on military aircraft. And what are they doing over there in France? French students up in arms over retirement reform. All the junkies and sex maniacs are screaming, no, retirement at 62. No, no, we want to retire at 22. We want care until age whatever. I never saw a country like this. Look at these metrosexual students. French students up in arms over retirement reform. They want to raise the retirement age to 62 years of age. Unbelievable how lazy they are over there. So what would you like to talk about? Winter is going to hit Britain a little early. Snow is about to hit Britain, where the Queen has banned celebration of Christmas to save money. We don't know if she's banned Eid al-Ad or whatever it's called. Ad al-Eid or whatever the holiday may be. Ad al-Mad. New York City failure on the Savage Nation. Go on, please.
Dr. Savage, I actually live near Princeton, New Jersey. We have a Borders and a Barnes & Noble down near me, and I went to both of the stores, but I want to talk to you about Borders.
Go ahead.
Yes, when I was in Borders, I walked in, and they had two displays up, neither of which was your book, one of which had a picture of the President of the United States that I won't talk about yet. So your book was on a table next to the display that was up where everybody could see it. Now, I walked over. There were a bunch of your books there. There might have been 8 or 10 of them. But when I opened it up, I found something very interesting. They have a security tag so that nobody could steal their books. And the security tag was pasted across the text in one of the pages in the middle of the book.
Oh, my God. They put the security tag in the book to ruin the book so nobody would buy it.
Well, I don't know that they did it for that reason, but they certainly, it was across the text. And I will tell you one more thing, if I may, and that is that I took one of the security tags off to move it, and the print was in the back of the tag. So it did actually take some of the print off, but it did not destroy the page. It only, they shouldn't have put it there.
Well, you see, my audience is the most loyal in the history of talk radio. And you were looking at these things, and you see them for what they are. I certainly really appreciate the army of savages and savagettes who are holding the bookstore's feet to the fire, particularly where they feel that there's some injustice. So I'm going to send you a fresh, free copy of Trickle Up Poverty for all of your hard work. Right? Now let's go to Florida. Scott, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Mr. Savage, thanks for taking my call. I wanted to let you know I'm a Navy guy going to Afghanistan shortly, and I heard your comments from last week, and I wanted to say thank you for your support of the troops and the job that we have out there trying to protect the freedom, even though there's very little moral or accountability in the government. That's my initial comment.
Well, I don't know how you can fight with the rules of engagement that Obama has put around you.
It's very disconcerting. Naturally, I've got a family, and I want to make sure that I get back to them. I'd like to have a, no pun intended, fighting chance to do that without having my hands tied.
Did you know the rules of engagement? Were you given them before you even went over there? Before you go there, were they given to you?
As I understand it, they will provide that in some sort of a seminar format prior to going, yes.
Page 264, no night or surprise searches of the enemy. Villagers have to be warned prior to searches. U.S. soldiers may not fire at the enemy unless the enemy is preparing to shoot at you first. U.S. forces cannot engage the enemy if civilians are present. Only women can search women. Troops can fire at an insurgent if they catch him placing an IED, but not if insurgents are walking away from an area where explosives have been laid. Nothing imaginary about those rules of engagement. That's just a partial list of what you're going to face over there while rooting out the murderous Taliban. Tell me that that's not absolute madness. It's coming to you in Trickle Up Poverty, the most explosive, detailed, inside story of what Obama is doing to this country. I'll be right back. So there's a lot going on. I mean, you heard that Pelosi took 85 trips on military planes at a cost of $2.1 million. You heard that the First Lady electioneered inside a polling place. I mean, there's a lot going on. And then wait, the commander-in-chief gives a speech to a group of dumb students, and he is talking about a questioner says to him, there's an increase in racial tension in America, and why is there an increase in racial tension? Obama comes back and says a tribal attitude is causing it. So the college teacher says, historically, when you look at how America has evolved, typically we make progress on race relations in fits and starts. He then said that the recession has played a part in driving racial antagonism while he has been in office. And he said, it's all a result of tribalism. Tribalism. Well, I would argue that it's a result of him, because he has purposely driven a wedge between the races. Obama is the most divisive president in American history. He has created almost a civil war in this country. He has played class warfare from the day he has taken office. He has played on the black side of himself when I got news for you, people are not that stupid. I want to show you something. And it's not offensive at all, by the way. I look at some of the comments on some of these, you know, like these appear on CBS, NBC, whatever. If you read what people are writing, they're pretty clever. And some of them really take umbrage at what this man says. And here's what someone wrote. He said, we're instructed about tribalism from this person. He takes teachable moments to instruct us about everything that is wrong with America. His wife electioneers inside a polling place. And it says they are the quintessential phonies. B.H. Obama lectures us from his superior cultural position. His ancestry never knew the throes of slavery. He has none of that. No matter where he was born, he has. His biological father was a communist, anti-colonialist, and a reprobate. His grandparents were anti-American communists. Almost all American communists I have known, he writes, and there are several, were white, blaming phrase. Always quick to blame, first the rich, then a family member, then someone else, then whoever for their own personal failings. They always felt shortchanged and deprived and entitled. Mean, sour, mendacious people always looking to trip someone in the dark, to trick and deceive. Barack and Michelle Obama, to trick and deceive. So, you know, it's an interesting line in there when he says that Obama's ancestry never knew the throes of slavery. I didn't realize that, in that his father was of African heritage, not of African-American heritage. Very interesting. And yet he's playing on this issue as though he himself inherited that trauma. I find that fascinating. I find that fascinating. When Obama says a tribal attitude surfaces in tough times, and that's why there's racial division in America. No, he and Michelle have caused the racial division, by the way. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. Lance in Sacramento, California, you're up. Go ahead, please.
Yes, Dr. Savage, yesterday you wanted to know about haberdasher and the origin of the word, and it's very interesting. It almost goes back to Ludlow Street in your father's little shop. Haberdasher goes to Anglo-French in the etymology, and it means petty merchandise. I thought you'd be...
Well, Harry Truman was a haberdasher.
Missouri.
No, I'm saying Harry Truman, one of the finest presidents America has ever had, was a haberdasher from Missouri, correct?
Correct.
All right, Lance, you get a free copy of Trickle Up Poverty for that one. I like erudition. Boy, I almost blew that word. That was a tough call, erudition. That was like ice skating right up to the glass wall, to the plastic wall. I remember when I started the talk radio, I was causing such a stir in San Francisco. My program director, I forget what he said. I said to him, don't worry about it. I said, I'm like a fast hockey player who knows just how to bang up against the plexiglass and to drive a puck up against the glass without making sure it doesn't injure anybody. He loved that one. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com, Houston, Texas. Brad, you're on the air. What's on your mind? Go ahead, please.
Thank you very much, Dr. Savage. It's a privilege and an honor.
Thank you, sir.
It cost me four rides in trying to arrange to go get your book. I have no car myself. I'm not able to drive, and I have to get places on a walker.
But why four trips?
Well, there are four different people in the neighborhood who have always before stopped and offered me a ride. And I was trying to arrange with them so that when I get my Social Security check next week, I'll be able to go and buy your book. But each time I started speaking to them about it, they said, oh, well, wave us down, we'll see you. And then they never...
Oh, you mean they wouldn't drive you because you wanted to buy my book? Is that it? Brad, you're saying that your neighbors wouldn't drive you this time because you wanted to buy my book?
That's correct.
Well, Brad, you can stay home and sit on that rocker because I'm sending you a brand new hardcover, free copy of my book, Trickle Up Poverty. Enjoy it. Let's go down to San Diego. Sue, you're up. Go ahead, please.
Hello, good afternoon. I just got your book yesterday, started it last night when I got home, and I am at the part of being the Tea Party, being aware of not being co-opted.
Right.
I love it.
Right.
I absolutely love it.
That the Tea Party should not be co-opted by Dick Armey's group, correct?
nor anyone else for that matter. I appreciate it. My boss is so excited today. I showed him I got the copy. He's been looking for it too. It's been sold out everywhere. I had to call around to a half a dozen stores. I finally pinned
one. San Diego is a natural environment for me. It's a big, it was a big conservative city. It has a large Navy presence. And so there's a large audience for the book there, for sure.
Sure. Yeah. And the,
And you're also overrun by illegal aliens, while your local governmental officials take the side of Mexico instead of the people who live in San Diego who are terrified of them.
We realize that. So, but I also wanted to let you know that the young man in the bookstore, he was actually very nice. And I pinned him down. I said, when's your next shipment coming in? He told me it was yesterday. I called yesterday morning and said, please hold a copy for me. Before I left the store, he looked at me in the eye. He goes, you're not the only one, believe me.
You're getting a free copy. Stay in the line. I'll be right back.
Savage. 1, 2, 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock, rock. 5, 6, 7 o'clock, 8 o'clock, rock. 9, 10, 11 o'clock, 12 o'clock, rock. We're going to rock around the clock tonight. Put your glad rags on. Join me, hon. We'll have some fun when the clock strikes one. We're going to rock around the clock tonight. We're going to rock, rock, rock.
Welcome to the Savage Nation. I get easily distracted. I may have ADD. I mean, I've achieved a lot in my life, but during the break, I went on to a story that said Madoff's home in Florida, Madoff's Palm Beach home under contract, listed for $6.5 and sold for more than $5. I looked at it. It's a dump. It's a complete and total dump. Whoever bought this paid far too much for this crap, dump. I've never seen anything like it. I don't know why anybody would want it. Let's say it wasn't owned by Madoff. Why would you want this house for that kind of money on the Intracoastal? I don't understand it. I know housing prices down there. People can be quite naive. This place is a dump. I mean, single-pane sliding glass doors that look like a set for Psycho. Let's go to the callers. Ron in Houston. As I said, I get distracted easily. Ron, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hello, Michael. I had an interesting experience today in Humble, Texas, the famous oil town here in Texas, and Barnes & Noble. And I finally got them to admit that the book exists. And they just called me up today after 3 days and said it's there. But my son and I were talking this morning. He's just joined the French Foreign Legion. And I was telling him what's in
your book. Wow, he must be some tough customer. I didn't even know that he's an American citizen who joined the French Foreign Legion.
Yeah, well, if you knew his mother, my former wife, you know why he left his country and had to get away from her.
Hey, thanks for getting that one in.
Yeah, well, what happens is that he cannot believe these engagement rules. He told me today, and he's listening on the internet right now. It's 11:30 out there, and he said he was going to go to his girlfriend's house tonight, and he's going to he should be listening right now, so he should hear me. But the point is that he says that they are taught to shoot through the women to get the enemy. And if anybody's walking away who they think is involved in the battle, shoot them in the back.
Unbelievable. Well, that's why we're still in Iraq and still in Afghanistan. It's because the rules of engagement were written by a bunch of idiots who have made certain that the wars never end in order to make certain that the American taxpayer is built for as many trillions as possible in contracting dollars. There's no other reason for them. No other reason but to keep the war going for the war machine.
Right, but he's been training the last 2 weeks in street fighting, and they were in a mock-up of Afghanistan. And
yeah.
He says that the bottom line is that they're being trained somewhat like the Navy SEALs. This is what they've been told by their commanders. And he told his commanders about your book, and they want to see it. So I'm going to send him one as soon as I get my hands on it, so he can read it to his commanders. They don't believe what's going on.
Well, nobody can believe the rules of engagement that are uncovered and exposed in my book. And by the way, I know this is Woodward's book has beaten mine last week. That book has nothing in it that anyone needs to read. Let me go right head on head with these two other books. My book is the only book that really exposes anything about the Obama administration that is worth knowing. The rest is nothing but media hype. And you need to get the book. And I'm sending you three copies, one for you and two for the men over there. By the way, before you go, how is it that an American can join the French Foreign Legion? Is that allowed, I guess?
Well, he's got two passports, American and English. He was born in France, but any American can join because.
Wait. So that means your ex-wife was French.
Yeah.
And oh well, you should have said that when you said your ex-wife. You should have said my ex-French wife, his French mother. That would have said everything.
I'm sending her a copy of Liberalism is a Mental Disorder. I found it.
Well, wait a minute. I have a sequel coming out, which is Gold Diggers Anonymous.
But guess what? The guy in a bookstore, this is a used bookstore, you know, that had your books in it, too, he's got a green beard. And I was in there, and I pointed, and I said, look at that, just like Michael Savage says, you got a green beard. And then I look at the girl behind the counter, I said, look at that, you got green eyes. I says, Michael Savage predicted you'd be here today.
Hey, is a green beard normal in Texas at this time of year?
I neglected to ask him why, but you know it's got something to do with the greenies.
Well, I guess it's got something to do with the time of year in Texas and the amount of toe juice that they're drinking. I understand that toxic toe juice in small portions produces a certain kind of psychedelic high and it turns your beard green. I don't know.
Could be. I don't know. But you know, think about.
Well, look. Good luck with your son and. Send us a body count of how many he kills over there. I got to tell you a funny story. War is about killing the enemy, you know. It's not about serving them hot and ready meals. You know that.
Yeah.
And the day you start teaching our men to worry more about the enemy's rights and the enemy's state of mind, that we're finished as a nation. I got to tell you something. I got to tell you something. Every ex-combat soldier that I've run into tells me the same story over and over again, that all of them were sent over there to act as cannon fodder for one administration after another. None of them was sent over there to kill. And when they do their job, they're held up on charges.
Yeah, well, they got a saying in French, translated in English, it goes like this. Teach them a lesson they remember for as long as they live. Kill them.
Yeah, no kidding. Well, I took a young man in who was a former combat veteran into a restaurant, a friend of mine, a couple of months ago, owned by an Italian man. And the minute I introduced him, I said, this is my friend and just came back from Iraq recently. And the minute this Italian man met him, he said, how many did you kill? He said it with joy. I mean, isn't that what he went over there for? He didn't go over there to serve him hot and ready a falafel, did he?
Oh, he's ready. I tell you, it's unbelievable. His training is you know, really intense stuff. Out of a class of something like 50 people, there were only 7 or 8 that made it through and got accepted into the French Foreign Legion.
Well, how'd your son turn out so tough with the French mother?
Because of her.
What do you mean? You mean he had to learn how to be tough to live with her? Is that it?
Well, if you knew her, okay, you'd believe in that basically you'd be a combatant, okay? Because at three different times, I had to pull a knife out of my body with her, okay?
Oh, wait, this is getting interesting. You mean she became physical to that level?
Oh, yeah. She stabbed me once in Paris. She stabbed me once when we used to live in Florida. And there were numerous threats. And on one occasion, she tried to drown my son in 1999, and I happened on the scene and saved his life. And she held his head underwater for well over a minute. And then when she saw me, she released him, and he come up and he said, "Mommy tried to drown me. Mommy tried to drown me." And she
no, she was just training him for the French Foreign Legion. She was giving him early training.
Yeah, you know she do. I'm trying to teach him a lesson.
Or she was teaching him how to survive waterboarding.
Yeah, she's psychotic, is what she is.
No, she sounds like she belongs in a mental hospital, or at least working for the Obama administration, one or the other.
Well, she's an airline, so she thinks she's wonderful.
Oh, she's an airline flight attendant. What if you say the wrong thing to her on the plane? I can just imagine that one.
Oh, she's got a lot of people to lose their jobs already. She's written people up and knocked them off and lost their careers. She's a real wonder.
Was she good-looking to go with it? Is that how you got seduced?
Oh, absolutely gorgeous. And one of the most beautiful women I've ever seen in my life. And this girl would knock you out. She walked away. She was offered a job by a friend of mine in Hollywood to do Elizabeth Taylor look-alike movie, okay? And she walked away from it. That's how beautiful this girl is.
And how did you meet her?
Paris Air Show, 1999, rather.
Are you a former pilot, Ron?
Yeah, sure am, yep.
Are you a former Marine pilot or U.S. Air Force or what?
Strictly civilian and commercial aviation.
But you were at an air show. You run into her. She was there. What? Just trying to meet rich guys who were buying planes.
No, she was working there and just intermingled and happened to meet her and brought her to America, took her to Broadway, showed her how American life is like, you know, took her to Phantom of the Opera, you know, and showed her, to, you know, the Lincoln Arts Center. She's very
So she swept you off your feet right off the bat.
Yeah, essentially she sure did. I mean, it's, you know, a chick like this will blow a man away. She had everything going. She could go.
But I mean, truthfully, let's be clear. We're both adults. There's not, did you sleep with her the first night?
Hell no. No, I played it really American-like, you know, Puritan American, more or less, you know. Yeah, she appreciated that.
Oh, so that, so you're both, you were, it's almost like Prezi Zana. You were both playing each other. No, you know what I'm saying? You were both like a spy, counter-spy. You were playing the American gentleman when you really aren't, and she was playing the lady by, and by what you're telling me, maybe she really isn't.
No, but you know, the problem is that her psychosis began to develop later on, and I found out a lot about her childhood. And of course, she was not abused sexually, but she was abused physically by her father, brutal French, you know, and beat over the head with brooms and sticks and stuff like that. So, she
oh my God, was she raised in a nunnery?
Yeah, well, no, she joined a boys' gang to go beat up on other boys when she was a teenager.
Now I'm starting to think you're embroidering. You're calling me from a madhouse in Houston. Now you're making this up.
No, this is true. This is true.
She beat up guys with broomsticks?
No, her father used to beat her up, but she had this mean attitude. So she joined a boys' gang, and they used to beat up on other kids every now and then.
Wow, my God. So before you go, because you got my curiosity and everyone else listening, how long did you live with this hellion?
Well, we had a pretty good marriage for about 9 years, and when it fell apart, man, it fell apart in such a way. And her, to this day, she's got somebody she's married to who was her boyfriend before, who occasionally threatens to kill me and things like that. And basically, that's one of the other reasons that Derringer, it's a thing.
So that's why you sent your son to the French Foreign Legion so he can come back and act as your bodyguard.
Well, I may need it.
All right, you're a good sport. This has been good as Groucho Marx. What I'd like to do is send you 3 copies of Trickle Up Poverty, one for you, one for your son, and one for the commanding officer of the French Foreign Legion. I'll be right back.
Savage.
We are playing this in honor of our last caller whose son has gone to the French Foreign Legion. And now, play the next one now, just for fun. Come on, come on, come on. Come on, guys, you can do it.
Every little breeze seems to whisper Louise. Birds in the trees seem to twitter Louise. Each little rose.
I used to love the 60s and 70s French, you know, like the kind of the romantic comedy style, the scenes of the idealized Paris, and along the lines of the way Woody Allen has the idealized Manhattan, or the way he used to do it. There's no idealized anything anymore, you know. I'm an old idealist. I admit it. I mean, I have a dream for America that doesn't exist anymore. But you can't, you know, condemn me for my idealism about what this country could become again once we rid ourselves of these Democrat lice that have invaded the body politic and corrupted it. I mean, you know, give me my dream. I mean, I do have a dream. I'd like to have it back. So she violates the law. First Lady campaigns inside a polling place in Illinois. This is a breaking news. And the Illinois Board of Elections, whatever it's called, the Al Capone School of Elections, says she didn't know that she was breaking the law. And as I said to you, ignorance of the law is no excuse. She violated the law. She has to be charged. I don't expect her to go to prison for that, but something's wrong with that picture. Las Vegas. Now, let's go to Albany, New York. Tom, welcome to the Savage Nation out of Albany. Go ahead, please.
Oh, Michael, it's an absolute pleasure to talk to you. You were my intellectual, philosophical, and conservative mentor.
Wow. That's a big, big shoe to fill.
No, not for you. You can definitely handle that.
What's on your mind? So what's on your mind? Tell me what your question or comment is, please.
I went to to the local Walmart here and was looking for trickle-up poverty for one copy for myself and another copy for an elderly lady that my wife and I take in every other weekend to get
her out. That's very nice of you. Thank you. And what happened?
They looked at me like I had two heads, like they had never heard of the book before or heard of Michael Savage or anything. Of course, that doesn't really surprise me being in the town that I'm in.
Yeah. Well, these are kids. What was a young book clerk?
Oh, yes.
Look, I try to figure out why so many daffy people are clerks in bookstores. And someone just explained to me they've just come out of college where they read their first books. And they sort of act like they're the sommeliers of literature, where they walk around and they think that they have some sense of being an author themselves because they're a clerk in a bookstore. And as such, they think that they are gaining some kind of power by being around all those important tomes. You know what I mean? And therefore, they can cast value judgments on people like yourselves, like yourself. So, you know, you got to expect this from these kids.
Well, the problem is most of them have never even, other than what they've been assigned by their professors in college, they've never read any book.
No,
on their
they
own.
Know nothing about the real world, which is why they're a clerk in a bookstore.
Absolutely.
But, you know, God bless them. 98% of them are very nice people. They're very objective. You get the 2% who aren't. But isn't it true in every industry?
That's true. That's absolutely true, unfortunately.
But so you bought the book. I'm going to send you another free copy. That's a very nice call from Albany. It really is. So what else do you want to talk about? I mean, there's a heck of a lot of news stories out there, folks. There's an awful lot of news stories out there, I'm telling you. And if you have found the book sold out in your city, I do want to hear from you. Because I'm sending these reports on to my publisher who said, yes, tell us where they're sold out. Like I just learned today, it's sold out in San Diego. And two of the best-selling cities for this book are Sacramento, California, and Chicago, Illinois. Would you believe that? It's a very interesting thing what I'm learning is that where the audience really is activist. So the first lady was caught electioneering inside a polling place and nothing happened. She lectures us about apple slices and grows vegetables and she ate a hamburger, a cheeseburger, and French fries on the campaign trail. I mean, I'm at a loss for words. I'm at a loss for words. I really am. What else is in the news? Ahmadinejad heads to the border with Israel to taunt the Jews. How does this end? How does this end when Hitler keeps taunting the Jews? How does it end? Does it end badly for them or badly for him? When does it end? When is it over already? When is the world rid of this cockroach? Marianne in Sacramento, go ahead, please.
Yeah, I was in the Borders in San Mateo, and they don't have it on the front shelf. I found it in the back on the bottom shelf under politics, and there were four copies, and I asked the clerk why it was not featured in the front of the store, and he said, oh, it's up to the publisher. They don't, if they haven't arranged with the store.
That's a lie. Was it in a Barnes & Noble?
It was a Borders.
Well, I know the publisher paid for front-of-store placement, so he's lying.
I said that to him, and he just said, well, you know, it's not up to us where we put it. So thought you should know that.
Well, I understand. Did you buy yourself a nice guy? Did you read the book? Let's talk about the meat of the book. Have you actually looked at it? Has anyone read the book?
I just picked it up today. I've only opened the front two pages.
All right. I hear you. You're getting a free copy for going through all of this rigmarole. Thank you for the call. You know what I think I want to do for you now in the Savage Nation so I don't bore you? I have a 37-point program that I think you could use as a somewhat of a litmus test for any candidate running for office. And I think it's worth looking at. It's at the back of the book, so you don't just think I'm complaining about what's wrong. I think that the Tea Party has a 10-point contract from America, and that's not bad. But I have a 37-point program in my book, and I want to play it for you. But first, we're going to play Barack Obama's tribal attitude clip. Go ahead, please.
You know, if everybody's working and feeling good and making money and buying a new house and a big screen TV, you're less worried about what other folks are doing. And when you're out of work and you can't buy a home or you've lost your home and you're worried about paying your bills, then you become more worried about what other folks are doing. And sometimes that organizes itself around kind of a tribal attitude, and issues of race become more prominent.
He's trying to justify his having flared up racial enmity in America, blaming it on the economy. But in fact, it's not solely about the economy. It's really about him using the tool of racism to exploit racism, to provoke racism, in my humble opinion. He is the most calculatingly divisive president since the Civil War.
Savage. Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
You know, if everybody's working and feeling good and making money and buying a new house and a big screen TV, you're less worried about what other folks are doing. And when you're out of work and you can't buy a home or you've lost your home and you're worried about paying your bills, then you become more worried about what other folks are doing. And sometimes that organizes itself around kind of a tribal attitude. And issues of race become more prominent.
Once again, we have the power. You know, we got this man in office. I think we're all proud of Barack and his accomplishments. Everybody I know in our communities are praying for us. Every day we feel that, and let me just tell your listeners that it means all the world to us to know that their prayer circles out there and people who are keeping the spirits clean around us.
Well, what she said, and did some electioneering. I mean, it could be there's an excuse wrapped up in that. Play some of the tribal music on the Savage Nation. I'm enjoying that music. Very nice, actually, unto itself. I am a Native American file, a NATO file. I've always admired the Native culture of America. I mean, I wrote Earth Medicine in 1970 and published it in 72. I've always been fascinated by people who can more or less live off the earth for 20,000 years before the Europeans arrived on the continent. Can't laugh that one off. I wish I knew how to live on, you know, pine bark and deer. Play it again. Come on. It was a bad time to break. What an ugly dress. It's like a dress someone wore in the Catskill Mountains. And what kind of dress? Over the shoulders and everything. Queen cancels Christmas. Cost-cutting drive. Talk about tribalism. Do you think that the increased racial enmity in America is a result of economics or a result of the race war that Obama is trying to start in this country? Do you think that the increased racial enmity in America is a result of the tribalism that Obama mentioned in his speech, or a direct result of Obama's calculation that by dividing the races, he can motivate greater voting for him? Do you think, who knows what else you think? I can't come up with anything more. Michelle Obama campaigns for Russ Feingold and her husband. Why would anyone campaign for Russ Feingold? Play clip 22.
The truth is that this is the hard part. But remember, that's exactly what Barack told us. You remember? He told us that what change is hard. He said change is slow. Said it doesn't just happen on its own. Shoot, from the first days as a nation, every time folks have tried to make change, they have faced fear and doubt. They face setbacks and disappointments. But remember, as Americans, we have always pushed past the cynicism, kept moving forward.
Right.
And that's exactly what we have to do
right
today.
Right on.
Wisconsin, that
bring
is
it
exactly
all down, girl.
What we have to do today, because there is so much at stake right now.
That's right. Unless you can push your pan-Leninist agenda down our throats before you're out of office, age. That's correct. See, many of you are under the delusion, or illusion, shall I say, that come a November, which is scarcely 2.5 weeks away, when the Democrats finally get the whipping that they deserve, you think all will be well. But there's a couple of problems. Number one, you're going to get a lot of the K Street crowd back in the Republican Party, who are just as corrupt as the Democrats. That's number one. And number two, you don't understand the Obamas if you think that he's going to learn by America's discontent. He is only going to dig his heels in further. He and Michelle are on a mission. They are revolutionaries. They are not normal first lady and first man type of thing. They are revolutionaries, and they want to transform America into a communist slash Marxist, or shall I say, into a pan-Leninist entity, not even a state. They don't even see this as a nation. They see America as an entity that they were sent here to alter and tear apart and break down and change into something that is so beyond comprehension, you don't even see it happening. She's right that change is slow and hard and doesn't happen on its own. Every time someone tried to make change, they faced fear and doubt. How about when they faced opposition from those who didn't want to turn it into a fascist dictatorship run by a group of socialist goons? You want to call us names because we don't like your nationalizations? We know that the puppet masters put the two of you in power. We know that. We know who you are affiliated with. I spell it out in The Nightmare on Wall Street in Trickle Up Poverty. And if you disagree with what I'm saying, I challenge you to read that chapter, read the references, and call the show and debate me. And if you can't debate me, then you are wrong. That's all. Obama the space cadet. Some are saying he's a space cadet. I disagree completely. I believe that Obama is a very intelligent man. And I wouldn't mock him because he uses a teleprompter. And I wouldn't mock him because he makes mistakes when he's off the teleprompter. I wouldn't mock him at all. I think you're miscalculating the man if you do so. Instead, I recommend that anyone listening to this show who's a member of a Tea Party or would like to become a member of an American Tea Party, a real one, other than the one run by the Republican Front Group under Dick Armey, take a look at what I propose. Protect the Constitution, reject cap and trade, demand a balanced budget, enact fundamental tax reform. Look, I don't want to read the 37 points. It exhausts me. It's all in my book. English only. Close the borders. Defend the borders. Defund and repeal Obamacare. Reduce the size of government. Liquidate TARP. Oil for illegals. Strike down Anchor Babies Law. Export jailed illegal aliens. Fire Janet Napolitano. Use profiling to prevent terror attacks. Name the enemy. Rewrite the rules of engagement. Save the Navy SEALs. Reinforce the military infrastructure. Pay raise for military personnel. That is active duty combat troops, by at least 10% a year. Impose tariffs on China. Health savings plan. Flat tax. Keep the estate tax at zero. No to the VAT tax. Reduce pay and pensions for civil servants. Defend the Defense of Marriage Act. Encourage childbearing among tax-paying citizens. Tax credits for each child conceived and carried to birth. Increase the subsidies for each year the couple remains married. End affirmative action, limit welfare benefits, voting reform, boot the czars, put the brakes on GM. 33, reinstate the Wall Street uptick rule. 35, encourage risk-taking and entrepreneurship. And 36, institute tort reform. Finally, run the country like a business, not an empire. That's in the chapter that ends on page 309. Run the country like a business, not an empire. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. I got to tell you, you know, I'm a little, at this point, pretty tired. I've come through about a nine-month period of writing, editing, praying over this book, going through the galley phase, going through the printing phase, going through the promotion phase. And I went through Hell Week last week. I was afraid of Hell Week. I got to tell you something. To me, it was a real test of my mettle. I mean, I got to level with you. I was afraid I wasn't going to be able to do it. I have never shirked any of my responsibilities in my adult life. Never. I was basically forced by my father to face my responsibilities. And if I lied to him, he forced me to admit I lied to him. He didn't care if I cried. I squirmed. He'd hold me by the shoulders and look me in the eye, and he wouldn't let me turn my head left or right. He said, look at me. And I didn't want to. He'd make me look at him. And he said, you just lied to me. Tell me the truth. He forced me over and over again to face up to my responsibilities and my weaknesses. And I got to tell you, when last week came around, that first Tuesday, I had to get up 4 in the morning and go and do the tour. You say, oh, big deal. All right, to you, it's no big deal. To me, it was a big deal after the culmination of 9 months of struggle. It's taken something out of me, and I'm feeling it now. I'm feeling it like on the week after, on a Thursday, it's starting to hit me. Somehow, I've resisted feeling it. I don't know what it is. I really don't know. I'm really tired. And I may, on Monday, I'm just brain dead. I'm going to take a break. I'll be back. Savage. The call you're about to hear on the Savage Nation will change history. Listen to this caller now. Nathan in Houston, Texas, welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Hi, Dr. Savage. Hey, I have a quick question for you. I would really, really, really love to take trickle-up poverty into the polling booth in Houston, Texas. However, I don't want to be misconstrued as electioneering. Can you help me out on that?
Well, hold on now. Wait a minute. This is a very intriguing legal question. Is there a rule that says you cannot take a book into a polling place? For example, can a woman bring Harry Potter into a polling place? Can you bring a novel into a polling place? Or can they say you can't bring a book into a polling place? I've never heard of it.
What's best is early voting is at the public library.
I would suggest this, and I think you've just broken the code on the entire election. I would suggest that everyone listening to the show who has purchased Trickle Up Poverty, bring it into a polling place. Don't open it up. Don't talk about it. Is there an election law lawyer in this house who can answer this question? Is it permissible to bring a book into a polling place? If it is not permissible to bring any book into a polling place, that's one thing. Can voting officials say you can't bring that book into a polling place? I could tie the courts up for the next 10 years if they try this. What if thousands of you, you know, the book sold, I don't know, about 50,000 by now, if not more. I don't know what the number is yet, maybe closer to 100,000. What if 100,000 of you brought the book into a polling place on election night, the night that you vote, or the day you vote, rather? What would happen if they say, you can't bring that book in here? And you say, what do you mean I can't bring that book in here? She has a copy of a novel in her hand. And they say, well, that's different. They're able to determine which book is allowed and which book is not allowed? Is that not the equivalent of censorship? Is that not the equivalent of interfering with your First Amendment rights? This is a fascinating idea. And I'm going to encourage you to consider it. And we're going to get the answer to this in the next few days, by the way. Nathan, I'm sending you another copy to bring into the polling place. Trickle Up Poverty, Stopping Obama's Attack on Our Borders, Economy, and Security. 1-800-449-8255. This is amazing. That's an amazing idea. Is it okay to bring TUP when voting? Well, we're going to find out. I don't know. Books are allowed in you cannot bring electioneering material in, but who says the book is electioneering material? You're just reading a nonfiction book. I mean, what if you brought a copy of another best-selling book in with you? Would they say that's okay and this book is not okay? How would that be legal? This is going to be a very intriguing battle. It's going to be a very, very intriguing battle, believe me. Let's go to New York City. Robert from WOR, go ahead, please.
Hi, Michael. I don't know about bringing your book into a polling place, but I'll tell you where I bring my book. I bring it into my bedroom. My wife and I, every night before we go to bed, we lay down and read your book. And for all intents and purposes, lots of fun. After the book, nobody wants to go to sleep. Let's just put it this way.
Well, you know, you're probably a little agitated when you read the book because you realize what he's actually done and what he intends to do.
That's exactly right. You know, it gets the blood pumping.
Robert, I speak to middle-class people, not regularly, but sometimes, hardworking business people, let's put it that way. And I say to them, do you really believe that if this man had the power, he would seize your property? He said to me, 100%, that's what I believe. I believe 100% every one of them says to me that if this administration had the power to do so, they would seize private property in this country and take away people's houses. That is the fear that we have of this man. Now, why is it that everyone fears him like this? Any property owner fears this man. Why does he project such fear? The answer is because he has been a pan-Leninist since he's a child. That's why. He is a naked revolutionary. That's why. He's just a very good actor, Robert.
For all intents and purposes, he has never ran a business. He has never ran a lemonade stand. And for him to sit up there and tell us how to run our business, how to put bread on our table, insulting. That's
Robert, I'm sending you another copy. I hope it doesn't ruin your marriage, because right now you're in the marital bed both sharing the book. But what happens if I send you another copy? Will it drive you and your wife apart?
Well, no, that one's going directly to my dad, because actually, I spoke to you last week. You sent me a copy last week. I couldn't wait for the copy to come. I went to a local Borders, and I got another copy. That's the copy I'm
making. All right, you're being honest. I'm still sending it to you for your father.
So much.
And by the way, if you want him to read it in the bed with you, that's fine, too. I don't care. All right, Stay on the line. Look, you got to have a laugh when you can here and there. 1-800-44. This is going to be some election night. You know, it's funny. 2 years ago, when Obama was elected, I ran a party for donors to the Savage Legal Fund and some friends on a boat off San Francisco Bay. Memorable. I have a CD of it, DVD. I'm going to have a party this election night, a very close private party for about 50 people. But this is going to be a mind-blowing night. What's going to go on with the Democrats trying to steal the election and how the skew is going to come out of the media. I mean, wait until you see the ABC, CBS, NBC empty skirts, what they're going to do that night. So I'm going to go to a place where there's a lot of heavy drinking. I can tell you that.
Savage.
You know what I think I want to do for you now in the Savage Nation so I don't bore you? I have a 37-point program that I think you could use as a somewhat of a litmus test for any candidate running for office. And I think it's worth looking at. It's at the back of the book, so you don't just think I'm complaining about what's wrong. I think that the Tea Party has a 10-point contract from America, and that's not bad. But I have a 37-point program in my book, and I want to play it for you. 1, English only. 2, close the borders. Use illegal aliens to help build a wall between the United States and Mexico. Hire Sheriff Joe Arpaio to oversee the project. Pay the illegals for their labor in the form of a one-time worker fee. Upon finishing, repatriate them. 3, defend the borders. Pull the troops out of Germany and South Korea where they're doing nothing. And put them on our southern border where there's a real threat to our citizens. Defending South Korea can be done with our ships and subs with their tactical nuclear weapons. 4, defund and repeal Obamacare. 5, reduce the size of government. The federal government is bloated. With the exception of the military and defense, reduce all departments in size by 4% each year for a total reduction of size by 16% over 4 years. require government employees to speak English and have achieved at least a high school diploma. 6, liquidate TARP. 7, oil for illegals. 8, strike down Anchor Babies Law. 9, export jailed illegal aliens. 10, fire Janet Napolitano. 11, use profiling to prevent terror attacks. Let me read that to you and let me see what you think of it. The attempted terrorist plots on our own soil follow a definite pattern. All these acts were carried out by radical Muslims. Shrewd police work requires common sense. If acts of terror repeatedly come from people who practice a certain religion, and if all these acts are in accord with some twisted notion of their holy book, prudent police work would dictate that we immediately employ national, if not religious, profiling to stop the next terrorist before he or she succeeds. Does that not make sense to you? Is that not logical? Is there something wrong with you that you don't understand this? You know, I saw a movie. I forget the guy's name. He's very popular. He's a big liberal. He's a middle-aged guy with gray hair up in the air or something. And he plays the role of a guy who flies around the country and fires people. Does anyone know the actor I'm talking about? George Clooney, Up in the Air. So he plays a corporate guy who flies around and fires people by video screen. He doesn't even meet them. He just decimates their lives. So in one line, he says something. He's training a young girl how to travel and who to get behind on the check-in line and securities. Security says to her, get behind Japanese. They pack neatly. They know how to travel. They don't take up much time. She says, that's very racist. And one of the writers wrote this for him. He says, I'm like my mother. I profile. It's quicker. I thought it was very funny. You know, movies sometimes have some brilliant lines in them. But, you know, my friends, if a movie writer can write a line like that about who to get behind on a check-in line, we have clowns running the counter, the terrorism centers in this country who won't even name the enemy. They make believe we don't know who they are. That's how Fort Hood happened. 12, name the enemy. Name the enemy. 13, rewrite the rules of engagement. The ROE should match the real world that our troops face on the ground rather than the politically correct virtual world the bureaucrats live in with their computer models and fake war game scenarios. You notice that there's not one thing in my program that attacks President Obama. And that is because it's not about President Obama. It is about the policies that he and his minions have expanded upon that were put in place by George Bush, I'm sorry to tell you. 14, save the Navy SEALs. You cannot fight a war in ballet slippers. We must stop requiring that our soldiers do a plié before they ask the enemy for consent to being handcuffed and taken away. 15, reinforce the military infrastructure. And I call for raising the pay for military personnel, mainly active duty combat troops, by 10%. 17, silence the Hitler of Iran. 18, very controversial to you free market people, impose tariffs on China. We must draw a line in the sand with regard to China in order to loosen their stranglehold on our economy by imposing a 20% tariff on all goods produced in China. The tariff should be raised by 5% each year that China refuses to revalue its currency. The Wall Street Journal disagrees. The Republicrats disagree. I disagree with them. 19, offer health savings plans. See, I know what I'm talking about. 20, institute a flat tax. This simplifies the complex tax code and the unfair practice of tax discrimination. Since 47% of U.S. households pay no federal income tax, should I repeat that for you? 47% of U.S. households pay no federal income tax. All Americans above the poverty line should pay the same percentage of income tax, a straight 15% across the board for individual earners. Amen. Amen. Right on. All power to the people. 21, keep the estate tax at zero. 22, say no to the VAT tax. 23, reduce pay and pensions for civil servants. 24, defend the Defense of Marriage Act. 25, encourage childbearing among tax-paying citizens. Create a marriage incentive through lower taxes for married heterosexual couples and a tax credit for each child conceived and carried to birth. Increase the subsidies for each year the couple remains married. 26, make abortions illegal, with the exception of the physical survival of the mother to be determined by two licensed medical doctors. Require a NORPLAN for all women on welfare of childbearing age. At the very least, prohibit taxpayer-funded abortion through organizations such as Planned Parenthood. 27, end affirmative action. 28, limit welfare benefits. 29, voting reform. Require a government-issued photo ID such as driver's license, the ballot box, and voting. While this doesn't provide proof of citizenship, it eliminates the ACORN-style fraud of registering dead people. 30, boot the czars. 31, put the brakes on GM. Demand that GM and Chrysler be reprivatized and that they either stand or fall on their own. without further government intervention. 32, reinstate the Glass-Steagall Act. Oh, boy, is that so important, but it goes over the heads of most people. 33, reinstate the Wall Street uptick rule, page 308. 34, privatize the regulation of Wall Street. What does that mean? Well, it's very clear what that means. 35, encourage risk-taking and entrepreneurship. Reward those makers who provide the jobs that drive the economy. Obama was right to temporarily eliminate fees charged to lenders who participate in the Small Business Administration loan program. This move should be made permanent while cutting unnecessary regulation that stifles entrepreneurial endeavors. I want you to understand that where he's right, he's right. I don't disagree with him on principle. I'm not a zealot. 36, institute tort reform. Tort reform must be instituted for medical malpractice to curb frivolous lawsuits by the briefcase mafia and stop out-of-control awards for damages. Medical liability should be capped at $250,000 per claim. This has worked in California, where it was introduced in 1978. If passed, tort reform legislation will reduce the legal industry's inordinate influence at raising medical costs. 37. Run the country like a business, not an empire.
Savage.
Savage Nation. I want to talk about the bed bug infestation in New York City that is reaching virtually every avenue of society, from the poor to the rich, and whether you think this is a harbinger of the demise of our civilization, of our society. I mean, this is a previously eradicated pest problem. These bugs were beaten back for decades. But what happened is the Ivy League ruling class outlawed the organophosphates and the carbamate insecticides, and the replacement green products are not as effective as their predecessors. And as a result, if you look at when the bedbug epidemic started, you'll find that it was Al Gore and the EPA who frankly gave us the opportunity, or the opportunity for the bugs to proliferate now in New York City. It's a tyranny of the foolish. It's a tyranny of the idiots. And as C.S. Lewis wrote, of all tyrannies, a tyranny exercised for the good of its victims may be the most oppressive. It may be better to live under robber barons than under omnipotent moral busybodies. The robber baron's cruelty may sometimes sleep. His cupidity may at some point be satiated. But those who torment us for our own good will torment us without end, for they do so with the approval of their own conscience. And that's what we have now with these Ivy League morons who are ruining everything around them. I entered talk radio in 94 with the show called Immigrants and Epidemics. What's important for me to tell you is this. Many of the third world, of the issues of the third world that were gone in America, that had disappeared, are now presently emerging in the United States of America. The rampant, for example, the beheadings of police in Mexico. Do you think that's not going to come across the border with Janet Napolitano unwilling to crack down on this invasion? I think we're going to have the very same thing happening here, the same way the bedbugs have invaded America. Unless the borders are totally secured right now, we're going to have the same kind of corruption and the beheading of our own police. God forbid, but I'm telling you, it's coming across the border. Because unless we put the U.S. military there with tanks, we're going to have it in this country. Instead, we have Obama opening up our border even further than Bush opened the border. And so we go back to the simple issue of the bedbug problem. How is it that for decades there were no bedbugs to speak of in New York City or anywhere else in America? And where did this epidemic suddenly come from? Is it a result of massive, massive waves of immigration from the third world? Shall I say that to you again? Do you think there are no consequences to bringing in individuals who are not screened for health problems? Your grandfather, great-grandfather, great-great-grandfather had to go through Ellis Island, perhaps. If they were sick, they were turned away or they were put in quarantine until they got better. We don't even screen people. They can come in with the most fulminating tuberculosis and land in your hometown and go to your hospital and infect your doctor and nurse. And the government would arrest you if you dared say a word. That's a government upside down. That's why the people are up in arms. these nincompoop idiots who went to Ivy League schools don't know the first thing about anything. And consequently, the country has had enough. The country is screaming, stop now, we're going to throw you out. Now, I know bed bugs were mentioned in ancient Greece. I know they go back a long time. And I know that prior to the mid-20th century, bed bugs were very common. I'm aware of all of that. But the bed bugs were wiped out until the organophosphates, that is DDT and such, were banned as a result of Rachel Carson's book, Silent Spring. And so here we now face bed bugs in the highest places in New York City. And there's no chance of stopping them without using chemicals again, chemicals that were once banned. And I tell you this, you wait until the diseases start coming up in this country as they come across the border. You wait until you see the diseases that were once annihilated in this country or eliminated reappearing again. Diseases such as leprosy, tuberculosis, cholera. I know what I'm talking about. I'm not a TV host. I'm a trained epidemiologist. And I'm telling you, it's only a matter of time until you see this happening again. This emerging third world picture of the United States of America is a direct result of the open borders. And as I say, I've been after this issue since 94. I own this issue. Bush was no better. Bush opened up the highways to Mexico. Don't you remember the big fight over those superhighways with no inspections? What was that all about? Why do both parties want an open border with Mexico? I'll let you figure it out. I'll let you figure it out. So if you think a big R and a little R next to the name is going to save you, you're wrong. To me, the borders are key. You say the economy is number one, and I agree with you, but the borders and the immigration problem are directly tied to the economy. And Obama's war on our border, which is an interesting use of phrase, it's all about the vote. It's all about the cheap labor. We all know that. We've heard that. But let's look at the immigration problem from the point of view of health. What is the real cost of the illegal alien? Well, we know it's the vote, stupid. Governor Jan Brewer of Arizona said, President Obama, broken borders are not a laughing matter. No one in Arizona is laughing. Do your job and secure the border. And what did Obama say? He went to Mexico and he gave an astonishing speech. He said, in the 21st century, we are defined not by our borders, but by our bonds. Effectively, he erased the borders with Mexico with one sentence. Did you hear that? He erased the borders with Mexico with one sentence. Entering the United States illegally has been a crime since 1929. And federal law affirms that it is a crime to be in this country illegally. Did you know that? Now, let's put aside the fact that Napolitano was completely incompetent and should be fired. Because in this case, she is just reflecting the agenda of her boss, President Obama, who wishes to erase the border with Mexico. That is not hyperbole. That's what Obama said to Mexican President Calderon during a MexiFest in the White House. And he said that. In the 21st century, we're defined not by our borders, but by our bonds. Well, I don't agree with him. I believe that he is erasing our national identity. I believe that when you see members of La Raza and Micha, the subversive base of a Chicano leftist takeover, are deeply embedded in this administration, you should be very worried indeed. When you see that criminal aliens, who account for more than 29% of all prisoners in Federal Bureau of Prison Facilities, are draining us dry, and that the percentage of all federal prison inmates is even higher. You don't understand this. Investors Business Daily reported in 2005 that about half the prisoners in that state of California were illegals, 50%, adding to the financial burden the average American is supposed to pay. That's the single biggest problem in California, and the phony Whitman didn't even bring it up. When she debated Moonbeam Brown, she did not even bring up the illegal immigration problem, which is why I don't have great love for Meg Whitman as a Republican candidate. She's not going to do much different than Schwarzenegger has done. So look into this issue of the real cost of legalizing illegals. Sure, it's the vote, stupid. Look at La Raza and racism inside the Obama administration. Do you know what La Raza is? As the name suggests, La Raza is an overly racist organization, in this man's opinion. Its ultimate goal is to see one race of people, Hispanics or Chicanos, conquer another race, Caucasians, by rapidly taking over the latter's social territory. That's page 196 of Trickle Up Poverty. Now, here's one of the many ironies associated with La Raza's and Micha's desire to take back the birthplace of the Aztecs for Chicanos. The Aztecs were not Chicanos, but Indians. What's more, the Spanish from whom Chicanos are descended are the original imperialists, having conquered and destroyed Central American Indian civilizations centuries ago. Now, what other book on the market, or what other host on the market, knows any of this and can say it the way I say it? Well, nobody, which is, of course, why I have the audience I have, and whether or not we can get this out in time for the election is another story. Illegals and the Vote, How the Obama Administration Plans to Stuff Ballot Boxes, page 207. They're going to rig the vote. They're going to intimidate voters. They're going to buy votes using stimulus dollars. It's all about the vote. You don't understand this yet, but you will. President Obama, broken borders are not a laughing matter, said Governor Jan Brewer. No one in Arizona is laughing. Do your job and secure the border, she said. Illegal aliens are illegal. What could be more clear than that? I rest my case, ladies and gentlemen, from bedbugs to the demise of a society. Now let's go to the callers. Gracie, Sacramento, go ahead, please.
Hello, Dr. Savage. I've worked for the last 15 years as a polling inspector, which means I work there at the polling places, and I think I can answer your question about whether your book could be taken into the polling place. Actually, you can't take a book in that is politically influential or have a sign outside within 50 feet.
Well, hold on. We know about the sign. A book that is politically influential. Could someone bring in Das Kapital by Karl Marx?
Probably yes. Yes,
but they can't. Wait a minute. Probably yes?
I'm going to say
that's
yes.
That's not a politically influential book?
Only because the people that work at polls aren't exactly all there. So if they brought
Wait a minute. So you're telling me someone could bring in Karl Marx's book, Das Kapital?
Yes.
But they couldn't bring in Michael Savage's Trickle Up Poverty? Why not?
Only because they probably would not be familiar with the Karl.
Oh, well, then there you go. Then I want everyone listening to the show to consider bringing in Trickle Up Poverty to a polling place. Let's tie up the courts. Let's bring it all down, man. Let's tie up the courts for the next 5 years. I want them to seize my book. I want them to tell you you can't bring it in when you look over there and you see your leftist friends bringing in a communist book.
Savage.
Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Big news today is that Michelle Obama went to a polling place in Chicago, and the story is out that she was campaigning inside a polling place. The individual she spoke with said she was telling me how important it was to vote and keep her husband's agenda going. So there it is. Just came out minutes ago. Obama says blacks probably don't watch Meet the Press. I mean, it's getting crazier by the second. A judge ruled today that 20 states are legally able to sue to block Obamacare. Did you hear this? The judge said that the states have the right to sue to block Obamacare. I mean, things are changing very rapidly right now. We're in a very hot news cycle. And it also came out today that Nancy Pelosi took 85 trips on military aircraft, costing the United States Air Force $2.1 million over a two-year period, $101,000 of which was for in-flight expenses, including food and alcohol. For example, purchases for one Pelosi-led congressional delegation traveling from D.C. through Tel Aviv, Israel, to Baghdad, Iraq, May 15th to 20, 2008, included Johnny Walker Red Scotch, Grey Goose Vodka, E&J Brandy, Bailey's Irish Cream, Maker's Mark Whiskey, Courvoisier Cognac, Bacardi Light Rum, Jim Beam Whiskey, Beefeater Gin, Dewar Scotch, Bombay Sapphire Gin, Jack Daniel's Whiskey, Corona Beer, and several bottles of wine. Pelosi's abusive use of military aircraft demonstrates a shocking lack of regard for the American taxpayer and the men and women who serve in the U.S. Air Force. Speaker Pelosi may have a frequent flyer record for taxpayer-financed luxury jet travel, said Judicial Watch President Tom Fenton. On July 2, 2010, that's quite recent, Pelosi took her grandson on a flight from Andrews Air Force Base to Travis Air Force Base north of San Francisco. Can you believe this? She is using the Air Force as a private airplane service for herself. Pelosi's daughter and son-in-law and two grandsons were on the June 20th, 2009 flight. So she's using the Air Force as her own personal taxi service. I guess that's what she means when she said she was doing it for the children. Okay? We know Pelosi never became a lawyer and passed the bar, but we didn't think she was starting a bar in the air. It's terrible. It really is, babe. Well, if it's getting sickening, I mean, these people are criminally abusive.
I was looking
and
at the
arrogant.
I was looking
arrogant.
At the, it's awful. I was looking at the list too, like donuts and bagels. Like, what are these people on? They're carved out. They're high on alcohol. What's like, no wonder they're making
donuts and bagels, and they lecture us on health foods, right? I mean, it's amazing.
One thing after another.
And in South Dakota, the Dems have given free food and rides to the polls. People say to me, how do you do this show? How can you do this every day for 16 years? How come it hasn't killed you? The answer is somebody up there likes me because I don't know. Because if stress... See, if it's true that stress kills you, I would have been dead at 11. I have said this before, but I'm not kidding you. I've had a very stressful life. I mean, my family life was hard. We had tragedy in the family. Immigrant family. It was always tough. I personally don't think stress kills a person. I frankly think the lack of stress can kill you faster than stress itself. That's number one. Number two, it's how you deal with the stress. You know, I once learned when I was younger this from Chinese poetry. Look at a passing beauty as you would a passing cloud. What does that mean? Like when I was 16, if I saw a beautiful girl walk by in the halls of the high school, something, oh my God, you know, blah, 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 right? And eventually I learned that this phrase, look at a passing beauty as you would a passing cloud. You don't have to capture every cloud that goes by in the sky. You don't have to try and grab and hold on to every beautiful girl that goes by or every and anything else that you desire is the point. And it's the same in reverse. It's the same in reverse, I've learned. Look at every passing cloud that is dark and foreboding. As something passing through the night. It's going to disappear. Any darkness that comes your way, it's going to go away. I don't care how long it lasts, that storm is going to pass right through you. Just don't hold on to that storm. I know this is so new agey, you're not expecting it, but you know, at a certain point, don't you think we all have mental techniques or mental gymnastics that we must use in order to get through life? Right now, America is going through some very, very rough times. Economic, and social, not to mention the moral degradation of our society. And we don't have to point fingers because we know who's behind it. We know who the devils are. There's no point hammering it over and over again and saying, here they are and they're doing it again. Every movie that comes out shows someone slashing or burning or cutting. And the next day, the evil actor who's acting that part out with a gun in his hand or a knife is on Good Morning America talking against using a gun. You take an idiot like Sean Penn, one of the worst abusers of this I've ever seen. Virtually every movie he does, he's a murderer, a killer, or a violent person. And then the next day, he's up there talking about peace and love. I mean, you can't believe these people. They're liars. You got to remember, they're marionettes and they're entertainers. And so they're responsible for it. I remember in the 80s, every movie poster that came out in the 80s, I noted it to myself. Every poster, beautiful actress, gun in her hand. good-looking guy, gun in his hand. Every movie poster showed somebody with a handgun. And the next day, these schmucks were up there talking against handgun violence. They were joining the crackpots, the anti-Second Amendment people, at the Brady Bunch. My friend Jack just sent me some jokes, and he said, you know the honeymoon is over when the comedians start attacking Obama. And he quotes comedians who you've heard of, obviously, the nightly news guys, the big guys with the big shows that they don't write any of their material like. They're written for them by far smarter guys with eyeglasses. So I'll read you some of the jokes. The liberals are asking us to give Obama time. We agree. 25 to life would be appropriate. America needs Obamacare like Nancy Pelosi needs a Halloween mask. Have you heard about McDonald's new Obama value meal? Order anything you like and the guy behind you has to pay for it. What does Barack Obama call lunch with a convicted felon? A fundraiser. What's the difference between Obama's cabinet and a penitentiary? One is filled with tax evaders, blackmailers, and threats to society. The other is for housing prisoners. If Nancy Pelosi and Obama were on a boat in the middle of the ocean and it started to sink, who would be saved? America, says Jimmy Fallon. What's the difference between Obama and his dog, Bo? Bo has papers, Jimmy Kimmel. What was the most positive result of the Cash for Clunkers program? It took 95% of the Obama bumper stickers off the road. These are silly and simplistic but funny. And my friend says, you know the honeymoon is over for Obama when the comedians who are all left-wing start attacking him. They know which way the wind blows. They know that the American people are not listening to these comedians anymore. You know why they're not listening? Because there's so much at stake and we're losing our country to the crooks in Washington. It is no secret that the Obama administration has run our economy into the ground. The media may be starting to turn against them because even the late-night comedians on television are starting to make horrible jokes about Obama and his horrible policies. Joining us now is Ray Griggs, who has directed an upcoming documentary about a major topic I brought up in my book, Trickle Up Poverty, which is the crippling national debt. Ray Griggs, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Thanks, Mike, for having me on the show.
What made you create this documentary film?
Basically, it drove me as I was a Hollywood filmmaker on a course of doing science fiction and fantasy-type films, but I left my comfort zone area because I have kids and I'm worried about their future. And when Obama had passed the $787 billion stimulus bill, I felt I really wanted to use my talents to make a difference and step aside and do something for this country to help make a difference for the upcoming elections in November.
How much of a challenge was it to film a documentary about this topic?
Well, it wasn't that far of a stretch because politics, you know, in general are kind of science fiction in itself. You know, it was a little bit different not being a documentary filmmaker, but I said, you know, if I was going to make a documentary film, I wanted to be something that I would watch. And so I put 30 minutes of cartoon animation in there where I brought some of the presidents from the past in there and some of the current presidents and then some other people in there. And telling unique stories in a very entertaining, enlightening way, but breaking it down very simple that everyone can understand. So when they walked away from this film, they have a clear understanding of the tools to make wise decisions when they go to vote in November. The film is, you know, I Want Your Money. And basically, it takes you down a path of Reaganomics versus Obamanomics and the two controversies of those two directions, an ever-growing government and an unsustainable debt. As you know, we're spending $500 billion a day, $13.5 trillion for our debt, and there's no answers or solutions on how to pay for it and how to get it down. And it's just going to get to a point where it's just, you know, high taxes, high rules, high regulation, and ever-growing bigger and bigger government. And we've got to do something about it. We've got to get control of our government and put it back in our hands of the American people.
How difficult was it to find some humor in what Obama has done to our debt?
That's really good. Basically, at first it was a little struggle in putting the documentary together, but the comedy is generally within our politics anyway. It's gotten so ludicrous that you almost have to laugh at it, but at the same time you have to cry of what's going on. And so, you know, a lot of these people in the past have said these ridiculous quotes, and so I was able to find really great nuggets to show people. So, for example, like when Nancy Pelosi, you know, was first became Speaker of the House, she said, and I have a great piece in the film, a clip of her actually saying, you know, no more deficits and no more debt, that our children are going to be burdened down by an enormous amount of debt. And so what I put on there was this little BS meter, and as she's saying this, you know, we see it just go and climb until it breaks the meter. There's just funny stuff that you can find that these things happen within the politics. And some of the statements that our people have said in the past, are, you know, you just have to learn to laugh at them because they've gotten really out of hand and crazy.
Where do you think it goes from here?
Well, truthfully, you know, I personally see something having to happen that a lot of politicians, whether they're on the right or the left, don't want to go on a campaign and say because, you know, they're worried about their own personal careers. You know, we have to make a cut in some of these entitlement programs. They're not working. They're broke. And you know, we have to go back and restructure and redesign it. And that means making a cut because right now it's just unsustainable. And, you know, even what people don't even realize, in 5 years, the most expensive thing that we're going to have to pay for isn't the entitlement programs or the military. It's actually interest on all this debt. The interest alone is going to eat us up. And so, you know, we have to you know, be honest with the American people and say, hey, you know, it's not working. We can't make all these promises and help, you know, we need you to help us out and make a difference by taxing the capitalists. Because that's where I fear this road's heading down is, you know, the more taxes and burden us, almost like when it was with Jimmy Carter, 70%. The problem when doing that is, you know, the capitalists that make up America are your small businesses. You know, the laundry facility has two employees or the donut shop or even myself as a capitalist with a couple of employees. You know, say like Obama says, you know, $250,000. Well, small business, they easily make $250,000. To tax them on that, and then they have to pay rent and utilities and taxes and their employees, you're not going to leave them with anything, and it's going to really affect this country.
Have you received any feedback?
Honestly, really wonderful, actually, both sides. They've really, you know, they like that it's entertaining. The animation, you know, helps carry the film with the other great interviews that we have. They say that you've managed to find great clips. I got a great clip of Milton Friedman in there. So, you know, the feedback's really been positive and they walk away with clear understanding. And that's where I was kind of taken with it. They're saying, you know, you're giving me the tools necessary to make a wise decision in November. And, we're finding it entertaining, hilarious, and yet at the same time, very resourceful. So I'm really pleased with the feedback we're getting. It's a self-independent film, so we don't have the national P&A money that a normal studio spends in a film. I mean, they're spending anywhere from $15-20 million in a film that opens up on Friday. We don't even have one-fifth of that kind of budget. But at the same time, we managed to get in 520 theaters this weekend. We have over 3.5 million hits on YouTube, which has pretty much broken the record for any documentary out there in the history of documentaries as far as people hitting on the trailer. And, you know, we're getting a lot of people responding to it. So, you know, the feedback's been really great, and I'm really pleased with that. And like I said, I'm hoping that a lot of people come out this weekend to support the film, because if it's successful this weekend, we'll be in 1,200 theaters by the 29th of October.
Where can we read more?
Right. All they have to do is go to iwantyourmoney.net, look in the theater location that has all the states it's in and all the cities, and you just look for the city near you and shows you what theater is playing it. Now, keep in mind, like I said, some of the theaters you may call up today, for example, and they say, oh, I don't see that. Because it's a small budget, some of these theaters don't even realize they're playing it until Thursday or Friday when they actually get the film reel and all that other stuff. So if it's listed on the site, it's 100% it's playing there. So be rest assured, it will be playing there on Friday.
What's the next project you're going to work on?
I'm actually working on a film over in New Zealand with Weta, who did Lord of the Rings and King Kong. I'm working on a live-action version of Wind in the Willows, a famous book by Kenneth Graham in 1908.
Really?
Yeah, we're set for a fall release of 2012. It's because we're using sophisticated animatronics to bring these characters versus computer animation. And, again, it's going back to my love of science fiction and fantasy. But I'm hoping, like I said, I Want Your Money makes a big difference in November.
Any plans for a new one?
You know, I've having gone down this journey, I've kind of gotten excited about a couple other topics dealing with our ever-growing government. So I'm not going to rule it out. I want to kind of see what happens or how the people respond to this film.
Ray Griggs, thanks for being on the Savage Nation.
All right. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
As I wrote in Trickle Up Poverty, this administration has taken us on a fast track to Marxism. This is the Savage Nation.
Savage.
Here's an Amazon reader review of Trickle Up Poverty Bay. Well, if they're getting better by the day. Michael Savage is the role model that the young men like me need in this country. There are not enough strong men telling us the truth, telling us what a real man should act. They don't let the world tread on us. I see the world burning around me. No one else feels the flames. Michael Savage is the firefighter coming to put out the fire. Thank you, Michael. You teach me life lessons and jewels of knowledge I take with me that make me better. Michael Savage is my hero. This is an amazing book. He is a genius and an inspirational writer. Must read. How about one more? In Trickle Up Poverty, Dr. Savage is masterful. In this latest gem, not only does he give facts about the current Obama administration, he goes after prior POTUSes. Are these Dr. Savage's facts? No, they are our facts, and he's put them all into this book, along with footnotes and citations for all of us to check. This book is a must-read to complete the conservative wheel of truth and what is right. Bravo, Dr. Savage. You have opened many eyes with this book and continue to open eyes daily from your lair in San Francisco.
Those are the people that are going to change America come November.
Oh, I hope so. So there's tremendous more news. It gets worse. 13 troops killed in Afghanistan in 2 days. Top Obama advisor Jared apologizes over comment on gay lifestyle. The Hitler of Iran, Ahmadinejad, heads to the border with Israel to taunt the Israelis into firing at him. Queen in England cancels Christmas as a cost-cutting drive. I guess she'll have a Muslim holiday, huh?
Probably. That's the direction they seem to be going.
Military ballots may not count in Illinois. O'Donnell says there are more people who support my Catholic faith than his Marxist beliefs. Good for her. Bonnie Frank, who likes to pal around with billionaires and steer the money, says it's no crime having pals with money. Despite stops by Obama and Biden, a PA Dem trails by 10 in Senate race. You heard about this scream. An Illinois governor candidate named Rich Whitney is ID'd as Rich Whitey in black precincts. Couple is set to buy Madoff's multi-million-dollar Palm Beach mansion. I think he should change the toilets, personally.
It's a bargain at half the price.
Obama administration to let insurers raise premiums for sick children. God. Washington's largest insurer warns that customers' premiums may triple under Obamacare. You hear this?
There's health reform for you. Great.
Well, she did campaign inside a polling place. It just came out. They did rule that she did. First Lady Michelle Obama appears to violate Illinois law today when she engaged in political discussion at a polling place. She stopped off at the Martin Luther King Center on the south side of Chicago to cast an early vote. After finishing at the machine, Obama went back to the desk and handed in her voting key. She let voters, including electrician Dennis Campbell, take some photos. She was telling me how important it was to vote to keep her husband's agenda going, Campbell said. According to the pool reporter at the scene, the conversation took place in the voting center, not far from the booths. Illinois state law says no judge of election, poll watcher, or any other person shall, at any primary or election, do any electioneering or soliciting of votes, or engage in any political discussion within any polling place, within 100 feet of any polling place. White House defends electioneering. When questioned about the brazen nature of Mrs. Obama's campaigning, Press Secretary Robert Gibbs defended the action. He said, I don't think it would be much to imagine the First Lady might support her husband's agenda. Gibbs smiled. Maybe so there it is. Not only arrogance and criminal and lawbreakers, but beyond the law. Maybe this is an administration that is beyond the law. They are the law themselves.
Maybe she was just trying to keep the spirits clean around the polling place.
Yeah, I forgot about the spirits.
God, I guess Nancy Pelosi had some spirits too, come to think of it.
Well, Jim Beam to the rescue.
They ought to throw those votes out instead of the military votes they're throwing out in Chicago.
Yeah, Courvois about what's going on in Afghanistan from what's going on in the White House. But with all of that, you shouldn't have to worry about your computer on top of everything else. So go visit my advertisers at carbonite.com. They'll back up all your important files so they're safe no matter what happens. Use my offer code SAVAGE and you're going to get 2 months free with your subscription. That's carbonite.com, offer code SAVAGE. My position is this. You have proven that the Savage Nation is the Tea Party of radio. We have broken away. We have broken out. And let me tell you something else. Talk radio has come back with a roar. The media loudly proclaimed that the blogosphere was the new thing, that everyone would gravitate towards the internet, that radio was for the elderly, that there was no media for old men. Well, they were wrong. Every blogger who has come out with a book that I know of has failed miserably. Nobody knows who they are. They hide in their bedrooms, typing out hate on their computers and their bathrobes. I put myself on the line every day on this show. People know who I am. They know what I like and what I do. They even know who my dog Teddy is. And I believe for that reason, and because of those reasons, they have developed a personal relationship with me, Michael Savage. You've heard the reviewers on Amazon.com saying that like I'm an uncle to them. You've heard the caller say that they're willing to sleep in a parking lot outside a bookstore overnight in their truck to wait for it to open so they can buy Trickle Up Poverty. The people relate to me. They care and they act and they know that I'm the real thing. They know that I'm giving them the truth, not just putting on a show for ratings or money. This is more than a show. This is a phenomenon. The book is number one. You are part of something right now much bigger and much stronger and much more tangible than the internet will ever be. The empty suits and the empty skirts have long since predicted the death of talk radio, but it is not dying. Talk radio is getting stronger. I may be the first in the medium to say that, but I know it to be true. How else do you explain a book going to number one without a single review in the newspapers, without the support of Fox or CNN or MSNBC, without those snide jerks on MSNBC? No one listens to you. You're irrelevant. Nobody listens to you. How is it done without even Fox News, who won't have me on? How is it possible? I'm invisible to them. They thought that they had me in a box. They thought I was irrelevant. They thought that in order to be successful, you have to come through Mr. Leprechaun. Well, let me tell you something. I pushed Leprechaun down 4 or 5 slots. And let me tell you something else. I pushed Leprechaun down, and I don't need him. Leprechaun needs me. They have everything upside down. And you know why? Because I speak the truth, and they don't. It's not the media that spread the word about this book. It is you, the members of the Savage Nation. It's not the media that spread out across the nation and demanded the book from every local bookstore in America. It's you, the listener. It's not the media that pushed back every time a snotty left-wing clerk sneered that they wouldn't carry the book because I'm Michael Savage. It was you, the listener. And that's why not just Obama, but every traitorous false Republican in politics and the media should be frightened. They have lost their grip on the people themselves. They're going to the wrong people if they think they're going to get elected. Let me tell you something. If fake conservatives keep going to these wrong outlets and think they're going to get elected, they're wrong. I'm going to tell you right now, if I can push a comedian off the list, and if I can push Bob Woodward down, one man alone, no support, speaking the truth, because the truth is the ultimate victor. I'll be right back.
Savage.
First Lady Michelle Obama was on the campaign trail in Wisconsin for Russ Feingold. Listen to this.
Now, to tell you the truth, this thing here, I don't do this very often.
We can be thankful for that.
In fact, I haven't really been on the trail since a little campaign you might remember a couple of years ago. This cute, tall, skinny guy.
Oh, come on, please.
As a self-described mom in chief. As you know, my first priority has been making sure that my girls are happy and healthy and adjusting to a very interesting new life in that big White House.
Making sure that they all eat that healthy ice cream.
Once again, we have the power.
Wait,
you know, we got.
Remember, this is the spiritual First Lady praying for them.
You know, we got this man in office. I think we're all proud of Barack and his accomplishments. Everybody I know in our communities are praying for us every day.
But in what religious denomination?
And let me just tell your listeners that it means all the world to us to know that there are prayer circles out there and people who are keeping the spirits clean around us.
Watch out for those prayer circles.
We've come a long way, but we got to keep it coming. And this election is going to make a statement about whether
it'll sure make a statement.
Barack's power and support.
Wait, hold it a minute.
Deep. There are people.
Give me the music again. There we go.
Barack's power and support is as deep. There are people who are questioning whether
Obama's power from the prayer circles.
His support is as deep. You know, they want to make out like, well, this is just a one-time thing, right?
One time, right? Mr. Obama is now talking to African American bloggers and journalists.
We feel pretty confident about
feeling confident.
The issues that we're advancing, and. Look, media is changing so rapidly.
The prayer circles must be working.
Four websites, what you guys do every day, do two things. Number one, it allows us to reach audiences that may not be watching.
I keep saying it's not the internet, it's talk radio, Mr. President. You just stick with the empty skirts at MSNBC for your news. I got to tell you this as a side note. I know you listen because this is one of the last places you can get real, honest, independent, conservative opinions and unfiltered news. And I want you to get the full impact of the Savage Nation. Go to TRN1.com, become a premium member, and get Savage Live, Savage Archives, and the Savage Podcast at TRN1.com. Click on my picture at TRN1.com today. I'm going to tell you about the dish I cooked, star flounder, and how I cooked it. There's a fish store nearby, a meat and fish store. I love the store. I'd give the name for free, and they let the guy, but I can't because then you'll know where I shop and you'll look for me there, and you'll poison the fish, so I can't give you the name of it. But the guy has really good stuff. He specializes in good meats, and he ships them around the country, and he gets great fish. So he knows I like Petrali sole. You know, filet of sole, but it's called Petrali sole out here in California, Northern California. So he didn't have any yesterday. So he said, I got something better. I have star flounder. I said, what's star flounder? He said, try it. You like it. So I said, and I trust him. So I bought it. I cooked this fish. Well, first of all, it starts with smelling the fish. I told you I had an aunt, God rest her soul, who would go into a butcher store in the summer wearing a fur coat into the freezer because she knew the butcher was a crook. And that he would switch meats on her in the freezer. Remember that story about my aunt, God rest her soul? It was a hot August day up in the Catskill Mountains, Moishe's butcher shop. I hope his descendants are not listening. And she'd pick out a steak in the cabinet in the front, the case, the best, most expensive steak. And she'd say, grind it up for me, make it chopped meat. Don't worry, he'd say to her, I'll be back. And he'd go in the freezer. She always knew he went in the freezer. So sure enough, she'd bring an overcoat. And go in the freezer with him because she knew he'd switch meats and give him pre-ground chuck. She was right. She wasn't paranoid. I was a butcher boy that summer. I delivered meats. He would go in the bin. Whatever they picked, he put on the top shelf. And he'd come out with the pre-grade, turn the grinder on. And nothing would go in the grinder. And then he would take the meat. He had pre-ground the chuck meat. And he'd bring it out and show it to them with a smile. Take a look at this meat. So she knew better than to. But anyway, the point is, she went into a restaurant, which she never did in her entire life. She didn't trust restaurants. She was from the old country. They looked down on people who ate in restaurants. Could you imagine the day and age I grew up in? They actually, I had amazing relatives. They didn't trust restaurants. They thought it was junk. What are you going to eat that garbage in restaurants for? They assumed all food in restaurants was garbage. Only a home-cooked meal was good. They were probably right, but anyway, in those days, they didn't go to restaurants. They didn't trust them. Somehow they felt that only like dumb people who drank a lot ate in restaurants. Usually like wasps who didn't know food to begin with. They were all drunk anyway, so they fed them the worst food in like the Park Hotel on Fifth Avenue. They didn't know what they were eating because they were pickled on gin or whatever. So they looked down at anyone who went to a restaurant. The point is that whatever she ate, she smelled it first like an animal, but she was right. So I picked that habit up, and people think I'm nuts. So if I go in a restaurant, I say to them, okay, I'll have the fish, bring it out first. They won't do it. They won't bring the fish out because you got to smell the fish. Otherwise, how do you know how old it is? What do you think sauces are? Ladies and gentlemen, wake up. You know, today, all the cooking today consists of is taking bad food and doctoring it up with trick dressings in order to cover up the fact that it's not prime food. That's the whole reason, because really good food doesn't need a sauce on it to begin with. Now, the French need a sauce on everything because their food is terrible. Their food is so bad, everything is inferior. The meats are inferior, the fish is inferior, but they learned through the centuries after Napoleon got his butt kicked how to make sauces to cover up for the fact that all of their food was inferior to the Italians. You know, because if you look at the Italians, they do have sauces, but not like the French with the trick sauces. You know how I always said I like dogs, but I don't like cats. Dogs are overt and cats are covert. I don't like covert anything. I like everything up front. If a dog growls, I know it's growling. Cat's sneaky, but it always, like it makes in a box in a house. You don't know where it is. I don't like that. A dog is up front. You know, they walk, even the way they walk, they're out there. It's the same with cuisine. Italian food is like dog-like. It's out there. It's overt. French food is always covert. It's sneaky. There's always something sneaky about it. So I get the star flounder home last night after the show. I was in a cook-at-home mood. Now, don't get me wrong. I eat in restaurants all the time, but I cook at home once in a while. I was in the mood to cook at home. So I get the star flounder. I open the package, and you put your nose right on the fish. It smelled of the sea. It smelled like fish smelled to me. When I once lived in Marblehead, Massachusetts in the 1970s. I was researching a book, and I was living in Marblehead and commuting to the Harvard Herbarium. I remember a whole winter I spent there. And I used to get fish from the fishing boats down at the, believe it or not, right from the boats. And this is what the fish smell like. It was that good from Monterey. So anyway, here's what you do. It's simple. It reminded me of the years I lived in Spain. How hard is it to cook a piece of fish? Not hard at all. You wash it, you dry it. You don't need salt and pepper on it. I don't know what the obsession is. I watched that chef on the air. As I said, my mother would have thrown him out of her four-burner kitchen. And the chef says, oh, you got to put a little salt and a little pepper on it. He rolled so much salt in it, you needed a hypertension pill. What's this with the obsession? Fish already has salt in the flesh. You get oil very hot. Now, I mean very hot, but I don't mean sizzling because the fish will burn immediately. You got to get it hot, but not burning. That means hot, but not burning. That means hot enough that when you put the flesh in there, it's going to cook immediately, not suck up the oil. And then, and I don't mean an inch thick of oil either. You're not deep frying that fish. But you need it to be deep enough that it covers the fish, but not soaks the fish. So everything has a subtlety to it. So you get the oil hot. You slide the fish fillets in there. You do 3 minutes on one side. And then you turn it over. You do 2 minutes on the other. And that's the genius. That's the cooking recipe. Now, nobody in the restaurant business will agree with me. Because you don't make a living just cooking a good piece of fish in oil. You have to trick it with sauces. You know, this has been like a shot in the arm for me. It's been a long time in coming. I've been laboring under this, writing this book, sweating the book, dreading Hell Week. The Tuesday morning wake up and going down to that TV studio was the toughest thing I've done in my adult life in a very long time. I don't like television. I feared it. I was trepidatious. I didn't want to do it. And I did it because I committed to it to the publisher. And guess what? It went off without a hitch. And so here we are. On MichaelSavage.com, there's a review by Ted Nugent that you have to read. It says, if Dirty Harry wrote books instead of blowing away bad guys, he would have written Trickle Up Poverty. Beowulf, what do you think of my new headline on my book ad, Stop Socialism, Buy Your Copy Now for Your Children, for Your Nation? I think it says it all.
I think it does. It shows how important it is for the next generation of this country that they make a strong change in direction come November.
Los Angeles porn actor tests positive for HIV. CAIR, the Muslim pressure group, launches an Islamophobia division. We ought to launch a care division.
care packages.
Don't roll over for Obama. Don't let America go to the dog, says Teddy. It's a good video on Michael Savage.
Savage.